Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and today's conversation is with Craig Unger. Craig is the Federal Detention Trustee in the Office of the Federal Detention Trustee in the U.S. Department of Justice. Well, Craig, your appointment came 2 weeks after September 11th, 2001, or 9/11 as we know it as. What challenges did this timing present?
Interesting, to say the least. Upon assuming office, again, I was immediately involved, as was most DOJ staff, in the counterterrorism-related activities. The focus of the department was rightfully on the counterterrorism efforts and, of course, in the context of detention, ensuring we had the beds where we needed and when we needed them was the role I was at, very busy trying to support those folks. At the same time, I was very busy learning the functions of my new job, trying to assist in bringing this office online. The overall impact of the Federal Detention Trustee's office, I would say, was probably a delay in staffing my office and the ability to again get some traction and get started on the congressional directives that we had mentioned earlier. But however, it's certainly understandable given the scope of the urgency was related to the terrorist attacks.
What type of hours did you keep? You just described so many things. I found it hard to believe the days ever ended.
Well, I am fortunate. I have the marked train that I commute from out west several miles, and I was taking the early while I was getting up about 4:30, taking the earliest train in the morning, and there's one that leaves at 7:30, I believe it is. It gets me home at after 9 in the evening. So I only missed that train once, so I had to have my wife pick me up.
Your office's budget, as I understand it, has increased dramatically for FY03 from, if I'm reading this right, $1 million to over $1.3 billion. So tell me if I got that correct, and how do you go about thinking about the budget and spending this kind of money?
Those numbers are correct. It's quite a substantial undertaking that we're about to embark upon. What to spend the money on is fairly easy. It's the per diem and the medical costs and transportation of the more than 300,000 federal detainees that we're taking into custody annually. The strategic part is a bit more difficult. Again, currently, because of the daily needs of Marshals and INS, they are at times occupying any and all bed space that's available to them, regardless of, in some cases, of whether it's the most efficient or cost-effective. They're simply trying to meet the needs of short-term demand. So our office, as we assume responsibility, is going to try to take a more long-term approach towards and exploring a variety of solutions to accommodate the needs, again, as I had mentioned a little bit earlier, of perhaps from an economies of scale instead of paying sort of what the market will bear on the spot. An example probably be pretty overly simplistic, but buying 8 individual pints of milk from a convenience store is certainly going to be more expensive than buying a gallon of milk at a supermarket.
Currently, as I understand it, you have management and funding control over the detention space, but no direct control over the personnel. What management challenges does that present? I mean, how do you get people to listen to you, for example?
Well, actually, I would say having authority over the appropriations is certainly a significant first step to insufficient to exercise de facto control. Without control of the appropriations, we would certainly be quite limited in our ability to affect change in the status quo. That being said, nonetheless, I believe the field staff that I've come into contact with are very receptive in trying to work with, again, even advancing technologies or some solutions to the burden that they've been that's been placed upon them with this, again, significant growth after year after year. So it will. And eventually, as I mentioned earlier, hopefully there will be some additional detailees or reassignments to our office and to where we really will build a coalition to hopefully win people over.
One of the big issues that comes up often when we talk to people is the challenges of working with other federal government agencies. And I'm curious about your relationship with the Marshals, the INS, and the Federal Bureau of Prisons and how you go about making that work.
Over the course of the last year, again, we've certainly strived very hard to include those three components in all aspects of planning and decision makings. And this is goes from focus group sessions we put together to work details to field travel. I think keeping the lines of communication open has led to a great learning experience on behalf of me and my staff, and I hope those agencies feel similarly. In implementing these pilots, again, we're going to need multiple levels of participation from through the whole process, and hopefully we'll be achieving some success stories along the way and will further open the dialogue between those components. But it's been a challenge, certainly. Any time we're trying to change the status quo, I think you can expect to be looked at as adversarial or confrontational. But we've certainly tried very, very hard to better understand what the issues and the daily items that are they're confronted with, and before we just try to come in and effect change.
Tell us about the Justice Prisoner and Alien Transportation System.
Well, JPATS, as it's known, is a detainee transport system that moves detainees throughout the United States, as well as conducting several international flights. Like a typical airline, JPATS is a hub-and-spoke network of routes used to transport detainees all over the nation. JPATS conducts the repatriation flights to various foreign countries to remove illegal aliens. It's quite a organization. It was in 95, JPATS was actually born out of a merger between the United States Marshal Service's Air Operations Division and INS's Air Transport Branch. And as a result of the merger, the DOJ agencies combined their air fleet, which are used to move literally thousands of prisoners and aliens nationwide on behalf of the Marshal Service, BOP, and INS, and on occasion, the military and state and local governments.
How big, can you give us an order of magnitude of how big this this operation is?
Last year, JPATS transported more than 152,000 prisoners. It's on a weekly basis, we're moving, several thousand is not unusual. The fleet of aircraft includes everything from wide-body jets to fixed-wing prop airplanes.
And it's so famous that it even had a movie, right? This is Con Air you've described. Is that?
I would. I saw the movie, and I would not make too many comparisons.
But let me ask us a more serious question about the management challenges of operating an airline in such a high-security environment. How does that play out?
Well, it is the challenge, and JPATS has always operated in a high-security environment. Again, moving literally thousands of prisoners each and every week requires extraordinary security precautions and careful coordination. Ground security is provided by Deputy U.S. Marshals, the Bureau of Prisons correctional officers, and INS, both detention officers and detention enforcement officers and deportation officers at each and every airport hub and transfer point. Certainly being vigilant to escape attempts as well as potential assaults from the outside is a constant concern both in the air and on the tarmac. Mm-hmm.
Are these prime opportunities to escape? I wouldn't have guessed these are the places you do that during the transportation.
Well, I would certainly agree it's an opportunity with the precautions that I've witnessed. I've personally participated in I think it was seven now JPATS flights, and the planning and the both from the scheduling to the pre-flight crew to the actual performance of the transport is pretty remarkable with highly trained and professional staff, and it's not advertised a lot. In fact, you probably may have seen one or been sitting by one at any one of the major airports and not even known it. So it's again, it's certainly a concern and a challenge, but very, very effective and professional organization.
Tell us about some of the other management challenges your office is facing.
I believe probably the major challenge we touched on earlier was getting the components to act and think as one, again, in the context of detention requirements. Currently, despite all those INS, Marshals, BOP being part of the Department of Justice, there are organizational barriers that sort of prevent us from being fully synergized, again, in the context of detention operations. As the number of federal detainees has increased over the last several years, in some instances, again, agencies have had no choice but just simply obtain space wherever and whenever it become available, and sometimes competing with one another for the same beds in a particular local area. So we certainly would love to get to the point where we speak as one voice and both assist those agencies in enhancing the quality of care, the proximity to the courthouse or the port of entry that they're needed, and again, also containing costs on behalf of the taxpayer.
What are some of the barriers that prevent the kind of coordination from happening you described?
Well, I just think force of habit, any change in human behavior, is somewhat difficult to overcome. And I'm certainly aware that, that anything we want to try to implement or gather, where I'm in someone else's turf, and I try to be very sensitive to that. At the same time, because we're not necessarily trying to point out inefficiencies or problems, there's certainly a lot of positive, incredible performances that are going out on right now that I'm extremely proud of as a citizen to see how a few people in some of these remote districts are really just busting their tails trying to keep the system running and to get detainees where they need to be at the right time. And so sometimes coming in, it does appear that I'm Monday morning quarterbacking and second guessing. So I just think I need to redouble my efforts and try to be seen as an advocate on their behalf as opposed to a critic.
It's a good stopping point. We've got to go to a break. Come back with us in a few minutes as we continue discussing management with Craig Unger of the Department of Justice. This is the Business of Government Hour.